Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, you can go to www.mecu.com. Remember, it is a credit union. You're a part owner, and it works for you. You can also click on their banner at steinershow.org. It's not a bank. It's a credit union. Works the same way, though. Okay, before we jump into our conversation with the folks from around the country in the Occupy movement, having online here for a few minutes is Richard Scher, who is host of Square Off. That is on Sundays on Channel 2. And Richard, how are you?
Mark, I want to thank you so much for that wonderful introduction. I know you have a lot to do tonight, so I won't take more than 30, 35 minutes of your time. No, I understand. We only have a second, but you've got all these intelligent listeners who are up with all of the contemporary issues. And so I just wanted to let them know that this Sunday at 10 a.m. on ABC2, for the first time in the history of local Baltimore television, we're going to have the Battle of the Talk Show All-Stars with you and Anthony McCarthy from WEAA, challenged by Tom Maher and Sean Casey of WCBM. And it should be interesting because you guys are more progressive. Is that what you call it? Liberal?
Progressive? Yeah, I could wear that label.
Okay, wear the label. And they're somewhat conservative. And I know it's going to be a lot of fun because you're terrific. And I love your show, and I listen to it as often as I can. And what you're about to talk about, especially in light of this accusation of a sexual assault down at McKeldin Square, the whole thing's very alarming, the way this is blown up now. So I'm going to let you do that, but you are one of our favorite Square Off panelists.
I enjoy myself on Square Off. So what time is it? Let the folks know when they can see it.
Okay. They can see this coming Sunday, November 6th, at 10 a.m. on ABC2. And if they miss it, it's on squareoff.net. And you know that Square Off is now in its 23rd year on local Baltimore television.
That's pretty amazing.
Longest-running public affairs show in the city, and we're very delighted to have you and Anthony as regulars on the program.
You see, Richard, so, you do have staying power, don't you?
Well, you know what? I'm like old luggage. You can't get rid of it. Look who's talking. You have staying power, too.
Yeah, true.
But let me jump off, because I want to hear what you're going to have to with your guests on this Occupy movement. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks a lot. Richard Scher, tune in this Sunday, 10 a.m., Channel 2. And we will square off with the right. They often like to be bullies, but we don't like to be bullied. So anyway, we're going to slide on into our conversation about the Occupy movement. And we've been covering the Occupy movement since the beginning. We went to New York and produced our short video. We're going to be visiting other Occupies movements around the country as well. We'll continue the conversations here on the air every week and almost every day, at least for a few minutes, an hour-long programs during the week to talk about what's going on. And we are instituting this new conversation, which is a conversation between Occupy movements around the country. And we're doing that today. Joining me in studio is Shalom Brown. Shalom Brown is a participant in Occupy Baltimore. And she's a software developer, as makes her living 9 to 5, but she's an occupier when she's not developing software. And we're also joined by Jamal Crawford, who's publisher and editor of The Blackstonian and an organizer of Occupy the Hood Boston. And you can connect on our site to hearing him and seeing what he does and to this really remarkable paper, The Blackstonian. And Jamal, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
And Aaron Hind is with us. And Aaron served in the U.S. Army from 2000 to 2004, was in the 101st Airborne, deployed to Iraq from February the 3rd, for a year, from February to February in 2004. He's a member of the Bay Area Iraq Veterans Against the War, a participant in Occupy San Francisco, and a friend of Scott Olson, the Iraq veteran who was shot in the head by the police. And Aaron, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
And before we jump into around the country, there is a piece of local news with all this, and Richard Scher alluded to it, Shalom, and I think we need to clear it up because the conservative right we meet in this town leapt on it, some politicians leapt on it as well, as soon as this rumor jumped out that somebody was raped and that the security at Occupy Baltimore didn't do anything, didn't want to call the police, didn't listen to her, and we need to set the record straight.
Well, you know, I just wanted to say that as of this afternoon, the police did release a statement that says that as of currently, their investigation is finding this to be unfounded. And this is the Baltimore City Police saying they can find no evidence that this occurred. This supposedly occurred on a Friday night. While we do take the allegation itself very seriously, we have continuously updated our sexual harassment, our no-tolerance policies. Both of those statements are online and available for people to view. The Baltimore Sun published on its website the official police statement. We all take it very seriously. We talk a lot about security. We all believe that security is paramount to our movement, and the safety going forward is something we're constantly revisiting. And we're always talking about ways to modify and improve our current model. That being said, we're also painfully aware that ultimately, we're in public space. And as a result, there's only but so much any security can do at any one point in time. We can't put our hands on anybody if you are on security without being liable for charges yourself. Really, truly, only the police can enforce any rules or policies. While we can set no tolerance policies as a community, we are limited on enforcement. And it's something that we are painfully aware of. So that, you know, as we're take it extremely, extremely seriously. And we do have media mediators on site. We're getting local rape counseling victims and women's shelters involved. Many of them have offered to help offer their service free of charge to assist us in this matter in any way that the victim sees fit. And whatever the decision is on her part, I think is something that we'll definitely support.
And there was also, just get this record straight as well, the piece was put in the Sun and some other places in Fox 45 News. There was a statement put out by Occupy Baltimore not to call the police if you were sexually assaulted. Now that would you put that one to rest for us as well?
Yes,
please?
That we're calling it pamphlet gate. essentially, what we, and there's conflicting stories of what exactly occurred, but we believe a group of people or one or two people who claim to be affiliated with us that we don't think were truly affiliated with us handed out some pamphlets that implied that we are, if you are a victim of sexual assault, you should not go to the police. Because we're really an amorphous group, we're an open democracy. If something isn't talked about at the General Assembly, there's really no way for it to be official, as that's our only truly official body. Because, again, we're in public space. Anybody can walk up at any point in time and claim that they're affiliated with us and hand out anything that they want. But we at the General Assembly never knew about it or even discussed it until after the fact. Many right-wing blogs and different media outlets did spin it in tandem with our sexual harassment policies, which we worked very hard to update in writing. It was something we had already voted on in General Assembly, but we never put into writing. We worked very hard to do that and publish that as quickly as possible because, again, we do recognize it as a serious concern and a serious issue and try to do everything we can to mitigate that.
Now, I want to go to Aaron and then go to Jamal because I want to talk about what's going on there in two Occupy movements there. And I was really impressed by what I saw Jamal do on tape and the speech he gave at Occupy Boston. But I wanted to talk about the police attack that took place in Oakland. And anybody who saw that, and there may have been comments from people who even do not like or support the Occupy movement, were shocked at the kind of violence that took place in Oakland that day. And you were a friend of, and I think, did you say, served with Scott Olson, who is an Iraq War veteran.
Yeah, I was a friend of Scott. He was a Marine. I was in the Army. But, yeah, there had been protests all day over the dismantling of the Oscar Grant Plaza Occupy Oakland encampment. And as a result, there was a massive police presence there along with riot squads and everything else. And eventually, I forget the timing, around 7:30, 7:45, they really opened up harshly with the smoke canisters, with the flashbang grenades, and as a result, Scott Olson was terribly injured. Mayor Kwan was out of Oakland at the time and has since come back. She's been trying to make apologies for her absence and for the way the police was, the police presence handled the protesters. But ultimately, the city of Oakland has really been galvanized by this, and as a result, on Wednesday, there's going to be a general strike in Oakland, We're planning a lot of things on Wednesday. There's going to be three major assemblies during the day. There's going to be actions all across the city. There's going to be children's brigades, elderly citizens brigades. There's going to be a lot of just normal, everyday citizens out there trying to shut down the financial businesses that refuse to close on this day that the people have declared a general strike.
And I want to come back to talk at length about this general strike and also what's going on outside these movements. I want to, though, bring Jamal Crawford in this conversation. Let me play a very brief clip from his speech to introduce him to you all, and then we'll bring Jamal into the conversation.
So I live in Roxbury, a little bit over that way. And we have a lot of issues in our community that face the Black, Latino, and Cape Verdean people of Roxbury, Dorchester, and Mattapan. We respect the movement that you've done, and so far are in agreement with much of what you have to say. But I'd like to ask a question to the crowd. You can answer or nod or just think about it.
Hello?
Is this movement a movement for white people?
No!
Thank you. Well, we have some grave concerns in Roxbury, Dorchester, and Mattapan. Some of you may know 51 people have been murdered this year, much of which has happened in a two-mile radius from where I live. Many of those people are people I know who are no longer with us. We have a question in the community, which is, where does the gun come from? If we really think about it, a lot of these corporations that we're talking about, it's all the same thing. The interest to control war, the interest to control prisons, the interest to control the courts, the interest to control the police, the interest to control the banks, they're all the same people.
Jamal Crawford speaking to Occupy Boston. He's publisher and editor of the Blackstonian and an organizer of Occupy the Hood Boston. And Jamal, that was a I listened to your entire speech, and it was an impressive speech, a pretty powerful speech. And I talk first a little bit about Occupy the Hood and what's going on in Boston.
Well, basically, you know, Occupy the Hood, you know, was born out of the need to really address issues that are facing communities of color across the country, you know, some of the things we all share, and then some specific local stuff that's going on here in Boston. And many people across the country have critiqued the lack of diversity, lack of people of color's voices being heard in kind of the Occupy discussion or the Occupy movement. So it was born out of that, as you may well know. Started in Detroit with a young lady and a young brother who started Occupy the Hood nationally and Occupy the Hood Boston. In hearing the term Occupy the Hood, thought that that would be an excellent vehicle to mobilize and kind of coalesce all these activists and organizations who have already been doing the work around these issues that are very specific to us, but highlighted by the Occupy movement, but people of color are disproportionately affected by those issues. So, for instance, if we're talking about unemployment, of course, you know, Black unemployment rate is double the national rate. And I would wager in a city like Baltimore, which I've been through, you know, several times, as well as the D.C. area, other parts of Maryland, and so on and so forth, that your city is also facing similar situations where in the city itself, not just the state, but in the city you may even see higher unemployment rates. And then those rates get even higher when you specifically focus out and take Black men or teenagers, youth employment and whatnot. So we're suffering disproportionately for a lot of these issues, and that's why it's really important for us to kind of bring our stuff, not just our gripe list, but also our agenda and our policy, kind of what we want to see out of policy and the changes we'd like to implement.
The number of folks here, by the way, wherever you're living, is 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And join us as we talk to folks from around the country who are involved in the Occupy movements, 410-319-8888. And I'm curious what you all think about where the Occupy goes, and especially in terms of crossing racial ethnic lines and in this struggle for the 99% for a different America. I want to talk about your visions of a different America in a moment. But you know, when I visit Washington, when I visit New York, it was a pretty multiracial crowd in Zagat Park in New York City when we did our show up there. Baltimore is a fairly mixed group of people. Shannon sitting in the studio is a woman of color herself, and she's Shannon, I mean, and some of those places are clearly mostly white. But I wonder what and then we had this Occupy the Hood movement. And we had Philadelphia on from Occupy the Hood last night on this show, and I'm curious how you think that part of it plays out, and if it's different in different places, if it plays out where there's a unity that takes place that kind of hits America in a very broad stripe across all kinds of lines, or is it something else? And Jamal, let me ask you to start.
Well, you know, I think, yes, it is going to play out differently in different areas. We all have different histories. Of course, Boston, long rumored, and unfortunately I have to report to you that the rumors are true, Boston being a racist city. Many people have seen, you know, what happened during busing here, which was not 1950s Mississippi, but 1970s Boston, Massachusetts. A lot of people kind of think that these type of things didn't really happen up north, and Boston is a bastion of racism and white supremacy, so it's going to take on a different face here, as it is in a city like Philly, with the history of government repression, what happened to the MOVE organization, the firebombing of the homes that resulted in the destruction of, you know, city blocks, you know, at the hand of the mayor and the fire commissioner and the police chief and whatnot. So each city is going to have its own history, its own past, its own pain. Then all of us, people of color, black people, Latino and whatnot, we all bring with it what is our own cultural history. So for black people, of course, the transatlantic slave trade, the history of lynchings, you know, Jim Crow, the civil rights movement, the black power movement. With Latino people, whether you're talking about people from the Caribbean, you know, who were decimated by a lot of what Columbus did, as well as people in Latin America who were further decimated by the Spanish conquistadors and whatnot on in Brazil and all up through South and Central America. So everybody's going to bring to it with their own thing. Now, the difficulty sets in when oftentimes in my work dealing with, you know, anti-racism, anti-white supremacy, that oftentimes you touch on and you find pockets of racism within those groups. So the reason that people have, you know, critiqued some of the diversity is because even though people of color are certainly free to join the Occupy movements in whatever capacity they see fit, oftentimes when these issues are discussed and when white people may not have a knowledge or a different perspective of what happened, you know, like, why are you guys still harping on slavery? That was, you know, hundreds of years ago or what have you. Often we find more racism, more prejudice, more bias and bigotry and stereotypes and whatnot. And to me, in terms of the future, I don't think that it would be fair that, like, the Occupy movement is going to solve the race problems of this country. And it's different. It's very difficult for people with different views to come together. For instance, I'm a black nationalist and a pan-Africanist. So to me, what would I like to see eventually, what would be a good America for me, would be the dissolving of America, the returning of the land to the native people who had it, reparations for those who were affected by the transatlantic slave trade, so on and so forth. And America, as we know it, would not be able to exist if there was a true sense of justice and equality, because if I rob your house and I have your TV, I may apologize, I may go to court, I may have to pay a fine, I may serve my time, but for us to truly repair that, I'm sure you're going to want your TV back. and so I think America, that's the part that America hasn't done a good job of, is really restoring and repairing some of the damage they've done. In some cases, they've acknowledged what they've done, and others they haven't. There's been some kind of forms of apologies and whatnot, but nothing substantive that can seek to repair some of the damage that has been done in this country on the basis of race and in the furtherance of white supremacy.
So, Aaron Hind, is it Hind or Hind? How do you say last name?
It's Hind.
Hind. I'm sorry, Aaron. So how do you observe that in the Bay Area with Occupy?
Well, I look at the Occupy movement not as something that's going to change the country out of legislation or by becoming a third party or anything like that. I think it's more about changing things locally on the local level. I know the Occupy Oakland movement is trying to do some things on a local level to change things, but I think on a national level, what it's doing is it's changing the level of discourse in this country. It's creating an open forum that's raising the real issues that people are worried about. And as far as what I would like to see and what my hopes for the Occupy movement is, I don't think it's ultimately for the hope of the destruction of America. I think it's for the transformation of America, a reawakening. If America tried to pay reparations to everybody that it has hurt, not only indigenous people, but people overseas, especially civilians in Iraq and Afghanistan whose lives have been decimated by these wars, I mean, that would destroy America and destitute it in and of itself. So I don't think complete reparations is a possibility before we can begin the healing, because that would destroy us in the process. Ultimately, the Occupy movement is about opening up the dialogue to the ordinary American person and asking ourselves, where do we go from here and what can we do to get there?
Shallon Brown.
Well, you know, speaking to how race plays into this for us, you know, I can only speak for myself, but I think that a lot of it is about speaking about what we won't accept in our movement. And a lot of it's saying we will not accept hate speech. We will not accept anti-Semitism as a part of our movement. And people coming to in affiliation with that are not really a welcome as a part of us. And in addition, I definitely think that the unions play a really core part of that. I spoke in front of SEIU. a lot of unions are heavily based in the Black community and other minorities. And I think that plays a core part. And when we talk about the 99% and what that really means, it really is about people who are unionizing because they just would have absolutely no chance at any kind of a fair anything when it comes to getting any piece of America for themselves. And for me personally, I think that the movement itself and what it means on a whole and what I'd like to see is real education reformation in this country. I try to bring attention to the fact that I used to teach in a public school, Baltimore County Public School, for a year in my senior year of undergrad. And the things that I saw there as far as no heat and no air conditioning and chalkboards, nobody uses chalkboards anymore. A lot of it's dry erase boards. They had chalkboards with big gashes out of them, no running water in the school because the pipes had become so corroded that they didn't have money to fix it. I mean, you really would have thought you were in a third world country. And you're teaching eighth and ninth graders that don't know their basic multiplication tables. And I think if we open up that dialogue and really improve our education system in this country and elevate more people of color to higher education, that in and of itself becomes a big issue with inclusion. And I think that's definitely a big part of this.
Well, it's clear, I mean, that there are very different ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very broad movement, and it's appealing to, I think, a majority of Americans. I think in many ways it's appealing to a majority of Americans in communities of color in this country, at least by the polls that you see. But a lot of it is directed towards the kind of complete corporate capitalist takeover of every aspect of the American world and our planet. Look what's happening in Greece. Look what's happening throughout the Arab world. Look what's happening in sub-Saharan Africa. Look what's happening in Europe. I mean, it's happening not just here, but all over in many ways. And so if you can contemplate, I'm just curious what happens in the discussions in your groups with folks around you where you are, in your general assemblies, within your movements where you occupy the hood in Boston or occupy in San Francisco, Oakland, or here in Baltimore. What are we saying about what is happening in America and what we have to do about it? What we have to do about this kind of corporate control of every aspect of our lives and what it's doing to us, what it's doing to the earth and doing to its people. Let me jump in. We go to Aaron, Jamal, and Shallon. And feel free to jump in, okay. You guys, who I can't see.
I do just want to say that I was watching online a YouTube video that somebody posted recently, and it was the PEP, which is New York City's educational decision-making body. And they recently had a meeting which they basically tried to show. It came into effect when Bloomberg came into power in 2002. And it basically is where they invite the community as a whole to come and engage in a discussion, supposedly, and voice their concerns before they make major educational decisions. Well, it's become sort of democracy theater, if you will, where they make their decisions long before they get there. People can speak their mind, but the decisions are already made. So at the last meeting at the beginning of October, over 200 parents, teachers, and students occupied that. And as soon as the chancellor started speaking, they started mic checking and they started twinkle fingering and saying, this is not what democracy looks like. This is not what a forum for me to speak about something as important as my child's education looks like to me. And if you really want an open discussion with us, you come to us at our General Assemblies, because that's where we're really having the big community discussions. And it worked. I mean, they were totally, dumbfounded by what was happening as far as people not accepting the status quo. And I think that's a big part of what this movement is about. It was heartwarming. It almost made me cry because it was like, it's working. We're engaging people and shifting the discussion in a way that it hasn't been done yet in this country in a long time. And that's huge.
Jamal?
I agree. You know, it is huge, and I think that that's why it behooves all of us to kind of, interject and get some of the issues that, haven't kind of been to the forefront. So, for instance, just in our conversation, the other gentleman, was like, well, we can't do reparations, and that's the type of thing I'm talking about. So here you have different people with different ideas, and it's difficult of how this is going to come together. So let me give a one point.
Sure.
Most of us are all aware of, the problem of political prisoners in this country.
Right.
People are aware of people like Mumia Abu-Jamal. Maybe some people are aware of A-Trap Brown, whose name is Imam Jamil Al-Amin. There are a lot of political prisoners, my mentor, Matulu Shakur, and Eric Holder admitted right around a month or so after he was appointed as the new head of the DOJ. So he admitted that the FBI via COINTELPRO, that the United States government had used illegal tactics to frame these people, to falsely imprison them, so on and so forth. So when the highest official in that realm of Department of Justice admits that the FBI and the United States government used illegal tactics to frame and imprison these people, then the next thing is, so when are they getting out? Or at least they're all guaranteed a new trial, right? And if we look at some of the stuff around the cocaine versus the crack sentencing, when we look at the school-to-prison pipeline and all these type of issues where it is a little bit more concrete and fleshed out, I think that these are the type of issues that people of color and righteous-minded white people or other people who are participating in the Occupy movement could also lend their voice to shed some light on these issues, to highlight these issues, but also, too, to put forth some demands. I think to not have issues that you're directly engaged on and say, okay, the problem's education. Well, what we want to make sure is that every kid in America who goes to public school, has something basic like, oh, I don't know, a book, a pencil, so that we need to be able to push those type of agenda items. And with all the millions and billions of dollars that circulate around this country, I mean, it can get done. Some of these Occupy movements around the country have raised, large amounts of money. I would like to see us putting our money where our mouth is, putting our behinds where our mouth is, and I would like to see more arms and legs moving rather than lips and tongues.
I want to get some of the points you just raised here, and I'd like to hear what Aaron brings up.
Ultimately, the meme of the Occupy movement is we are the 99%. That comes out of the income disparity, and that's at the core of the movement. All the other issues being raised in the nation are also part of the 99% problems. But ultimately, the core push is to end corporatism, get the money out of politics, make capitalism a less inherently evil system, maybe even change the face of it completely. But ultimately, this what this occupation is doing is bringing people together, raising social issues and raising awareness and trying to work together for a common cause. And that's ultimately where it should lie, as far as locally, we are doing local actions. From direct democracy, like what this Occupy movement is doing, comes direct action, like the general strike on Wednesday, or like all the other small direct actions that aren't in the media that the other Occupy movements are doing. And this is also helping to foster awareness, get more people involved in the discussion, and get people off the couch and wondering, what the hell is wrong with our system, and how can I help change it?
I think that's a great point, but I know, once again, in terms of how people interpret those issues and how they feel as though they're affected by that. So if we're talking about banking institutions, we know what happened with the subprime mortgages. We know that Black and Latino people were given these, you know, disaster bombs waiting to happen. We know that Black and Latino people were less likely to receive a mortgage, more likely to get foreclosed on earlier, oftentimes paying higher rates than their white counterparts. We could look at some of the lending practices of these same institutions in terms of business loans, where once again, Black people who even had better credit than their white counterparts were less likely to receive a business loan, and if they did, it was at a higher interest rate, so on and so forth. And then also, too, in terms of capitalists and corporations, you have to look at some of the corporations that do major damage to my community, Black and Latino communities in particular. For instance, let's look at the gun industry in this country, and then let's look at their powerful gun lobby, which influences the politicians, so that any kind of law or change in policy to make guns less accessible in urban and inner city environments where it is only our people who are getting murdered at these ridiculous rates. But anything, any change to tighten up that policy in terms of straw purchases or anything is blocked very heavily handed by the gun lobby and these corporations who make millions and billions of dollars in this country every year. So for some people, they may be more mad at, like, the college student loan thing, and that's fine for those people who are involved in that. For our kids, a lot of people in our communities are more concerned with, you know, dying, going to prison, which is another, you know, another way to look at the capitalist system, because, of course, these private corporations are, you know, privatized prisons and are using the school-to-prison pipeline to kind of keep their wheels turning and keep the machine greased. So oftentimes when we're talking about these big machines, we also have to recognize that, once again, Black and Latino people across the country are suffering disproportionately, and oftentimes it's not just, you know, our issues in the balance or whatnot, but for us, a lot of this is life or death stuff here. You know, people are dying daily from Boston to Compton, you know, from Detroit to Texas,
to Baltimore,
down, left to right, all across the country. Black and Latino people are dying and going to prison at rates, and these are structures. I don't want people to think that these are separate issues. These are the same issues, because there's money in that. And there are some very, very fat cats who are profiting off of the pain and misery and disenfranchisement of my people in a disproportionate manner than is happening for poor working class white folks in this country.
We're going to take a brief break and come right back. And people are calling in at 410-319-8888. You just heard the voice of Jamal Crawford, publisher and editor of the Blackstonian, which you can see at blackstonian.com, and also attached from our website, organizer of Occupy the Hood in Boston. Aaron Hind is with us, who is an Iraq war veteran, served in the U.S. Army, who is a friend of Scott Olson, who was shot by the police in the head, which we want to talk about when we come back as well, is part of Occupy San Francisco. Shalom Brown is in studio. She is part of Occupy Baltimore and lives here in the city of Baltimore. 410-319-8888. We'll come back to the calls coming in as soon as we return. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we are talking with folks, as we do all the time here now, in the Occupy movement, but from across the country with different perspectives, talking about what's going on in their communities. Jamal Crawford's with us, publisher and editor of the Blackstonian, organizer of Occupy the Hood Boston. Aaron Hind is with us, who served in the U.S. Army from 2000 to 2004. Served in the 101st Airborne. Was deployed in Iraq from February 2003 to February 2004. Member of the Bay Area Iraq Veterans Against the War and participant in Occupy San Francisco, and a friend of Scott Olson, and Shallon Brown, who is with us, who is a participant in Occupy Baltimore, in the studios here with us now. 410-319-8888. Before you open the phones, I do want to ask a quick question of Aaron. What is the condition of Scott Olson, who was shot in the head by the police in the Oakland when the Oakland police attacked the demonstration?
Scott is conscious right now. He is not able to speak, but he can write. He's very tired, and he's being pretty much kept in isolation because of the media storm that's going on right now, but he is expected to make a full recovery.
So, and he was shot in the head with what?
It's not really clear. It looks like a gas canister of some kind. Hit him initially, and then I'm sure the flashbang that was lobbed at him a couple of seconds later with a crowd of people trying to help him didn't help his condition at all.
And it's just the fact that the brother who serves in the U.S. Marines and then has to come back to get shot in the head by the police, which is not a story that is uncommon, especially in many inner-city neighborhoods.
Can I say something really quick? Mm-hmm. Aaron, I just wanted to say we were watching you in Occupy Baltimore right after our General Assembly was over, after when it was really the end of the same day where people, after the police had already broken it up once and people were returning to the site. And we just wanted to say from all of us at Occupy Baltimore, we stand totally in solidarity with you. We were watching online the live stream. We were watching the tear gas cans. We were watching people get rubber bulleted. And it struck us all very deeply. And I think it really, really strengthened our, you know, want to help this cause and stick with it for as long as we can. So, our thoughts and prayers go out to you.
Yeah, well, what happened really galvanized the entire movement, and in fact, the entire world. Letters from Egypt were being circulated at the General Assembly the day after about them being in solidarity with Oakland. It's really surprising how massive. What happened on Oakland has really galvanized the attention of the world as far as the Occupy movement, and have sort of given people who didn't really give it much thought, say, maybe I should pay a little bit closer attention to what's happening. And especially the veteran community, it's really caused them to start getting a whole lot more active in their local occupations.
And it'll be tomorrow, I understand there's going to be a full uniform military march in New York at Occupy Wall Street. Veterans from who's left from World War II through my generation's war, Vietnam, to the wars of today will be marching in support of Occupy Wall Street. And there's this whole movement beginning from Occupy Military, Occupy Police, who are here to defend the perimeters. And I we'll be covering that as much as we can tomorrow when we hear about what happens in New York.
They're billing it as veterans of the 99, and it's happening on the same day that the general strike is happening in Oakland. And there's other occupations that are also planning on doing large demonstrations and actions that day as well. It's going to be an interesting day for sure.
Now, the general strike taking place in San Francisco, because I want to have in Oakland.
No,
I want to come back
in
Oakland, because I want to come back with a question for Jamal. But I want to put that out there. People don't know it. This is what I've been reading. Is that many unions, like the teachers' union, they're saying we're not telling teachers to walk out or not, but we're not telling them not to. That we support the effort. So, are unions backing this general strike in Oakland?
Unfortunately, the way a lot of unions are written is that unless the entire union agrees on it at a meeting, they can't really fall in line because it would be outside of their chapter. And since this thing was set up so quickly. A lot of unions haven't had time to get that kind of vote to draw that kind of support. So they're, as far as I can tell, I've been reading some of the letters, is that they're unofficially telling their members that you can do whatever you want to do in your off time, but we aren't supporting this general strike as of this time. So, you know, normal rules apply.
And I know, the general strikes are dangerous territories for most traditional union leaders to follow. If they would, it might change things. But and on the way here, Chris and John, we're going to come to your calls right here. But Jamal, one of the things I was thinking about as you were talking, we were talking about this here in Baltimore, that you know, to create some unity in this country facing this kind of gigantic corporate capitalist beast that is going to take over every aspect of human life. There is, and I was thinking about this just in terms of Occupy Baltimore, which is right now in downtown Baltimore on a small little island in the Inner Harbor, which is a tourist attraction area in Baltimore. What the effect would be if occupiers started beginning to occupy along with communities of color all the abandoned houses that exist, taking them over and saying, these are ours now. We're making a statement about this is where the violence started, this is where this dislocation started, and it has to end here as well.
You know, that's a thought that's been tossed around in terms of abandoned or foreclosed homes, and I think those who want to do that should, you know, organize and do that. You know, for us, when we did our Occupy the Hood event, one of the things that I wanted to make clear to people was that people who are outside of this community, people who are not people of color, that in coming in the community, you know, you're more than welcome if you so choose to, but your safety is not guaranteed. And when I say your safety is not guaranteed, I mean that entering into our community is the same as it is for 80-year-old women who have to traverse the city, or toddlers who have to traverse the city with their parents, all of whom are subject to all the problems that that plague our community. You know, bullets whizzing by, acts of violence, what have you. And of course, that's not the only thing that defines our community, but to not mention it, I think, would be neglectful. So whatever people want to do organizationally that they think can highlight the issues in their area, but I know occupying abandoned buildings in my neighborhood has a different connotation than occupying abandoned buildings in another neighborhood. So, you know, people need to just be mindful of that and really, I would say, work with organizations who have been working on issues of foreclosure and fair housing and whatnot so that people don't reinvent the wheel. If you are interested in basketball, then find yourself a good coach. If you're interested in tennis, find yourself a good coach. If you're interested in activism, for whatever genre or umbrella we could put that under, whatever issue it is, I think it would behoove you, if you yourself are not an activist or have not been active prior to this, to go find the people who have already been doing the work. They exist in every area across this country. Find the people who have been doing the work with no fanfare, oftentimes with no budget, oftentimes with no staff, and oftentimes with no assistance. So those are kind of the things I think that we should focus on and breathing new life into existing organizations that have already been doing this work.
Let me open the phones here. We're talking to folks who are involved in Occupy the Hood, Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Baltimore, Occupy San Francisco, Oakland, in a dialogue across the country, which we will continue with Occupy movements in our country. 410-319-8888 is the number. And Chris, in Woodlawn, you're on the air.
Good evening, everybody.
Hi, Chris. Welcome.
I'm from a community much like the one Jamal speaks of. I'm from the Bronx, which is a heavily Latino, Puerto Rican, Dominican. There's no really black. It's African. It's Haitian. It's every community and culture that people are from is recognized. So when I heard him bring up the issues that he brought up earlier, it seemed to me, and this could be my ear-hearing personality as opposed to perspective, but it seemed to me that Aaron kind of dismissed the things that he was saying because those issues may not reside in Aaron's community. And my advice to everybody is if you want to build a strong coalition, you need to reach out to people who you may have differences with and find your common thread and then shave off the excess. But when you dismiss a group of people who bring a lot to what you what you're trying to accomplish, because the way Wall Street may manifest itself in one community, it may manifest itself differently in another community. That's the chameleon that financial power is. It's going to do what it has to do to accomplish its goal. And again, I may have heard personality over perspective, but that's the way that came across to me.
Chris, I appreciate the comment. And let me let Aaron take a shot at that first and have a discussion about that for a minute.
Yeah, I totally didn't dismiss
mean to dismiss any group or ethnicity or whatsoever. My comment was that I totally understand that there's a lot of people who have had great injustices done on them, many groups of different people by America. And if we were to try to make reparations before we try to fix our system, it may end up being fruitless and we may destroy the system that we are trying to save. I totally didn't mean to dismiss anybody's opinion on who has been hurt the most or how long injustices have been done, and I'm terribly sorry if I gave that impression.
Can I jump in real quick?
Shallon, go ahead.
I just want to say, too, that I think we talk a lot about how, and this movement has got to be about all of us, no matter where your background or even directly where you live, even though, of course, that's a part of it and there are issues affecting the 99%. All of us have got to stand shoulder to shoulder in this. Okay, black, white, Christian, atheist, Muslim, it doesn't even matter. All of us have got to stand shoulder to shoulder and set our sights on the bigger picture. As Aaron was saying before, it really started with a bunch of people coming together and saying, we are no longer going to sit and be fleeced by our government and our corporations who are effectively controlling things and not getting enough done to help the smaller person in this equation. And while on the smaller level, the 99%, as we can affect our own occupies and our own communities, is going to vary as far as exactly what we do. Here in Baltimore, we do talk about fixing up row houses. How can we obtain grants and how can we make it easier to make that happen? Because if you go to Seattle, you go to Portland, their ghetto looks like Gwen Oak. They don't have urban blight like we do. Why are they able to keep their city looking far more pristine than we are here? And how can we hold our politicians' feet to the fire and say, we hired you to do a job, you're clearly not doing it, what do we have to do to make this happen? And so those are local issues. But maybe in Aaron's community, those issues manifest in a different way. So I think they're all very valid. And so it is always going to be kind of this dichotomy.
Though I would say, and before we turn over to some other callers here in Jamal, that my brother living in Seattle, the inner city communities in Seattle where native people and mostly black folks live may look better, but it ain't. Jamal?
I know people in Seattle, so I know the gangs is popping out there, the whole, guns and, all the same, a lot of the same issues, are there, as our communities do look different. Boston has a mix of projects, red brick, and yellow brick apartment tenements, which the caller from the Bronx is probably very familiar with and also very familiar in the Bronx. We also have a lot of homeowners here in Boston, too, Caribbean, African-American, Latino, and others. So there's a good mix. And, those type of differences come up. I didn't feel dismissed by Aaron's comments, so I just want to say that. So, thank you for saying that. But, yeah, I didn't feel dismissed. Everybody has their opinion. But when we're talking about coming together, it's very difficult because, like in what the sister said, Muslims have to come together with atheists or Christians, whatnot. That's not going to happen. You have people who have chosen opposite sides of the fence. And, yes, while both of them may be dealing with an issue like unemployment, the Christian is going to say, well, I'm praying about it, and I'm having faith in God and Jesus. The atheist is going to say, well, I don't believe in any of that. You have clashes here in Boston where a lot of the anarchists and the anarchist movement has been brought up in a lot of the press up here. So how is a person who their level of civic engagement is done through electoral politics, how are they going to find common ground with an anarchist? Once again, they might both deal with similar issues of unemployment or poverty or what have you, but the philosophy is different. And much like for me, I could never stand shoulder to shoulder with someone who, doesn't support reparations or the freeing of political prisoners. But also, too, there's other differences. For instance, Mr. Aaron is, out of the military. Me, myself, I would never join the United States military. And they wouldn't want me if I would. There's a bunch of different issues. People who have had their own paths in life, done what they thought is right. But what's right for one may not be right for the other. And that's the difficulty, at least what I've seen in the Occupy movement, because anything when it comes down to the issues of race, stuff like, and I've said this before in political campaigns, reparations is such a good barometer test because it's one word. It's a one-word issue, but I can tell you that largely across the board, white Americans are like,
Heck no. We're not dealing with reparations. It would bankrupt us. Even though common practice and law would tell you that if I robbed a bank and I stole $1 million and I establish a company with that $1 million, and then later on I get found out that I robbed the bank and, you know, and I'm guilty of the bank robbery and this money, do I get to keep my company? The answer is no.
And to wit, one of the things you said, I think, and what I heard you say in Boston, which was something that people need to investigate and just think about the roots of capitalism in America, is that Bank of America, part of its wealth in the very beginning before it was called Bank of America, came from the slave trade.
Oh, exactly. And I'm running into people from Occupy who are telling me, November 5th, you've got to withdraw your money. And it's like, well, I'll publicize that or whatnot, but my money's been out of Bank of Boston for 15, 20 years when that news circled around in the black revolutionary communities. Most black nationalists and pan-Africanists that I know took their money out of those institutions years ago when they were first named as one of the groups that profited off of the slave trade in America. So it's great, and it's another example of how pre-existing organizations and activists have been on these issues. And in many cases, it's great to see the people of the Occupy movements kind of catch up and get on board of, you know, we're ticked off about unemployment. Well, my people have been ticked off for at least the last, 10, 20 years.
We're just about out of time. First, Jamal Crawford, publisher and editor of Blackstonian, organizer of Occupy the Hood Boston. Appreciate you being here. You can go on our website and check out his work and the Blackstonian. Aaron Hind, I want to thank you, man, for all the work you're doing, all the Iraq Vets Against the War are doing to straighten out the country. And I hope that Scott Olson heals well, and then we will be checking in with you tomorrow to see what happens with the general strike. Thank you for joining us today, too.
Thank you very much for having me, and I just want to say I didn't say I don't believe in reparations. I said I don't think that we should come from a place where we have to have reparations before we can start working together. I think we should definitely make right all the wrongs we've done.
I think that would be an interesting dialogue for us to have on the air again. And I think we should probe it very deeply. I think it's a subject that's not probed deep enough, and I think that I would dedicate to doing that with brothers and sisters from all the occupant movements who really kind of wrestle these issues, which I think was done in a very respectful and good way today. And Shalom Brown, Occupy Baltimore, thank you for being in our studios once again.
Thank you.
And being one of the grassroots from here, doing the work here. Thank you all. We're going to check in tomorrow with Occupy. Thank you all for being in the studio and with us from around the country. On the way out of here, I want to remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at urbanitebaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Cricket Harrison and Justin Levy. We're engineered by Akisa Gunn. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and find out information about our guests and their work, please visit us at the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.